out, everybody.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Lights Out. I'm your host, Josh.
And I'm your ghost, Austin.
And I'm the... You say ghost?
Yeah, dude, like that was good. I actually like that.
That was good.
I'm your ghost, Austin. Yep, he's a ghost, all right.
And I'm the producer, Daniel.
And in a ghostly fashion, we are traveling up north to Austin's neck of the woods.
Yeah, my home state, Michigan.
Because there's a house literally with a portal to hell in it, seems
yeah.
like.
Yeah, there might be a few up there.
I thought that was just the whole state.
Oh!
No, I have nothing against Michigan. I actually have never been to Michigan.
It's underrated.
But it seems cool.
I love it.
It's kind of like split in half.
Yeah,
there's
true.
There's like the mitten part.
And yeah. There's the UP. We call it the UP, Upper Peninsula. Then Northern Michigan. It's just kind of the top of the glove. And then Detroit.
Yeah, then you got a big city.
Huge metro area. And then Grand Rapids on the other side.
Right, Grand Rapids. That's the capital, right?
That's no Lansing.
Oh, Lansing's the capital.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right. But it is full of haunted history. It really is. I was actually blown away at some of these different hauntings, especially this Hell House there in Michigan. It's probably one of the craziest haunting stories I've ever heard before.
Yeah, and I always like it when we have police records,
yeah.
like actual notes from... the local sheriff's department and the Michigan State Police eventually
That's
get
wild.
Involved.
Yeah, yeah. And like countless reports too. We're talking about cops staking out this haunted house.
Yeah.
To see, you know, because there's so much activity there. And as we'll see, it's a lot of poltergeist activity. But they were concerned that there was like some type of prowler around or somebody who was like coming out at night
Pranks
to like torment this
yeah.
family inside this home. It's just how much noise is in action. But then it just gets absolutely insane. We're talking a pillow trying to kill somebody.
Yep.
Knives being thrown.
Yeah. Spontaneous combustion.
Yeah. Fires just breaking out. I mean, this house is...
The state fire marshal eventually checks it out. And I believe he says something along the lines of, there was one fire that was humanly impossible.
Yeah.
That was
literally
in
the
notes.
Report. That's
yeah.
crazy. You never see that before. But to kick things off, we're going to start with the Michigan Hell House and the haunting of the Pomeranian family. This is absolutely insane. It's one of the most terrifying unexplained hauntings in Michigan history. And it's now become the Michigan Hell House. The family that lived there suffered for months. Just absolute terror. Falling paintings, strange banging sounds, as we mentioned, flying objects. You've got spontaneous combustion. And eventually, it drew the attention of state police and paranormal investigators. And our story begins in the summer of 1974 in a modest house in Merrill, Michigan. Merrill sounds like a small town because it is a small town out there in the boonies, less than a square mile in size with less than 1,000 people living there. And there were two brothers. They're both in their early 20s, Terry and Dwayne Pomeranian, who grew up in this house at 19931 Dice Road. And this house was built by their father, Harold, in 1951 before they were born. And by the 1970s, Terry and Dwayne knew that something was off about the property that they grew up in. On July 9th, 1974, their family of farmers worked the first day of blueberry season, and the brothers worked alongside their mother and father, whose names were Harold and Mabel. Around 8 p.m. that night, everyone went to bed after the long day. They'd been working in the fields, and by midnight, everyone was fast asleep. Then the sound of shattering glass awakened the family in the midst of the night. Their father grabbed a gun, thinking an intruder had broken into the house through a window, and he told the brothers to stay in their rooms as he went to investigate the noise. And when he got to the living room, he found a window completely smashed with glass scattered all over the floor. And a gentle breeze came through the window, but there was no other motion or noise anywhere that he could see. And no one else was inside the house beside the family. Their father then went to check outside, but there was no one out there either. thinking that the broken window must have just been caused by, you know, somebody staking out the house, someone prowling around, he decided to call 911. And the police came out, and they were unable to find any reason for this broken window. There's nobody around. They couldn't find anything that had been thrown through the window. It just seemed very strange that it just sort of exploded, right? And this would be the first of many nights where the family would be tormented by some unseen force. And from that summer of 1974 through the spring of 1975, the Pomeranian family would call the Saginaw County Sheriff's Department and the Michigan State Police almost every single day. Dozens of police reports were filed. They cited strange noises, including knocking, pounding, and rapping noises that seemed to come from inside and outside of the home. And for months, they could not find any sort of logical explanation for what these events were, where these sounds were coming from. In a recent interview with the brothers in this documentary called Michigan Hell House, done by Steve Shippey, who we'll talk about later, Terry said, "Evil was in the house with us constantly. Even though it's been 47 years, I know I think about it every day. I thought later on, why is this happening to us? You know, I mean, we've never bothered nobody. We went through hell, man." So even after all these years, it just seems like this had such a lasting impact on them, and it's something they'll never forget.
And they still can't understand it either. At first, Duane suspected that it had something to do with the new neighbors nearby, who had moved into the house just around the corner from them in June 1974. And at first, the unnamed family was fairly nice, they were friendly, but soon enough, they were pretty much less than ideal neighbors. The brothers eventually theorized that the neighbors had been terrorizing their home and then hiding, so like smashing the glass and then running off. These new neighbors also offered to buy the Pomeranians' house, but the family could never understand why. And one day, Duane ended up inside that neighbor's house, although he couldn't exactly remember why or how he had gotten there. The matriarch of this home, who goes unnamed through the rest of this, then gave him a tour of the place and took him all throughout the home. Oddly, she offered to cut his hair, and he agreed. And right after she cut his hair, Duane fell to the floor. He wouldn't wake up, so the family called emergency services, and when the ambulance arrived, Duane was turning blue and apparently on the verge of death. Luckily, he was given an emergency tracheostomy and lived to tell the tale. He was then diagnosed with epilepsy at St. Luke's Hospital in Saginaw, Michigan, which is very close to Merrill. But the strange part is that the Mayo Clinic later disagreed with this diagnosis, so it's still not really known what was going on. And reportedly, according to Duane, he had never experienced seizures before the events of 1974, soon after those mysterious neighbors had moved in. For decades, Duane had a gap in memory of a few hours when he was inside that neighbor's home, and after that incident, his mother never allowed him in the property ever again. But back over at the Pomeranian home, the knocking continued all through the summer and into the fall, and the phone calls kept coming into the Saginaw County Sheriff's Department, the family begging for help. One of the eyewitnesses to the bizarre events at the house was Saginaw County Sheriff's Department Sergeant Charles Frisbee. He had been one of the first officers to respond to the home in the summer of 1974, and he remembers the day he received a call from Harold about a potential prowler. But when he arrived at the property, he couldn't find any evidence of anyone being around the house. The knocking and the pounding sounds continued to plague the home, and even people outside of the Pomeranian family and the police also witnessed strange phenomena. In February of 1975, Doug and Vicki Buckley, who were next-door neighbors and friends of the family, had been sitting in the Pomeranians' living room one night, and they too heard a strange knocking noise coming from the north side of the home near the front door. The banging was so intense that the various paintings and pictures that were hanging on the walls began shaking back and forth along the walls, and Harold and Doug both exited the house from either side to check around the perimeter. I believe Harold went out the front, Doug went out the back. They circled the house, but nothing was there. And this knocking continued throughout the night. Another witness to the bizarre events was Pam Miller, Harold and Mabel's goddaughter. She too heard loud bangs, like someone had been pounding their fists against the walls. As the weeks and eventually months of bizarre activity passed, Sergeant Charles Frisbee said he had never seen so much police paperwork done on a potential prowler in the area, suggesting that maybe this isn't a prowler.
The activity escalated to the point where Saginaw Sheriff's Department agreed to put the house under surveillance because they're just stumped. They're like, what is going on here? Like, if it is somebody, if it is a human that's doing this, this is the only way that we're going to catch him. We have to do full surveillance. And on Halloween night, 1974, the police staked out the house. They placed squad cars on every side of the house so that if the banging began that night, they'd have visuals on the entire exterior of the home. Captain Spear also stayed inside of the home. And around midnight, Captain Spear radioed to the rest of the officers that the knocking had begun. The task force that had surrounded the home could not hear the knocking from the outside, but they could hear the knocks coming through the captain's radio transmission. Later into the night, Captain Spear was soon convinced that Dwayne and Terry were the one causing the sounds. So the captain took them to the state police post in Bay City for lie detector tests. While the rest of the officers monitored the home, Deputy Davis reported that the knocking soon turned to explosions. He compared the explosion to a blast of TNT. Like, let that settle in. Holy shit.
Yeah.
We've got knocking sounds, now we have explosions going off. Meanwhile, both brothers had been cleared by their polygraph tests. After that night, on November 18th, 1974, Terry and Dwayne both heard disembodied voices along with the banging on the walls. The voices threatened to harm them and even kill them several times. One voice said, "I'm going to kill your family." And despite the danger, the Pomeranian family members were devoted to their faith and believed that God would protect them and help them get through this. Still, they felt constantly terrorized inside their home, suffering from sleepless nights and high anxiety. According to Terry, the haunting also contributed to his father's high blood pressure. According to Deputy Davis, in a tape recording, he said, "They've been kicked in the nuts and twisted. There hasn't been a pleasant moment in their life since July. It's been hell." Kind of a weird thing to say.
Kicked in the nuts and twisted. Okay. I like that one. Yeah.
But after months, the Saginaw Sheriff's Department had zero suspects in the case and couldn't understand what was going on. They soon reached out to the Michigan State Police, who assigned investigators to the case, and they went and tried to find any sort of logical explanation for the poundings, the explosions, and these disembodied voices. They looked into the power company, the telephone company, Dow Chemical, and even the FAA. They even contacted the U.S. Geological Survey, which brought out seismographs to see if there's maybe some seismic activity going on that could have been causing the noises, maybe the ground shifting. There's something underneath the home.
Our taxpayer money going to work here.
Absolutely. This is important stuff. State police also swept the entire home, and a few officers even moved in so that they could monitor the home full time, which is absolutely nuts. You don't hear about that happening ever these days. Despite weeks of investigation, no logical answers were ever found. And out of desperation, they used money from an anonymous donor to reach out to the Duke University's Cyclical Research Foundation, run by the legend himself, William Roll. Roll and his team were known for investigating some of the most infamous poltergeist cases. We've talked about him in a number of cases on the show. If you remember the Seaford poltergeist case, pretty crazy.
Yeah, that was wild.
And he's the guy. He's the guy to go to.
He's the guy. And by February 1975, an unnamed parapsychologist was able to interview Harold and Mabel. And in a tape recording, Harold reported that a loud explosion had shaken the house. He claimed that, according to the police report and Deputy Davis, the explosion was the equivalent of 3/4 of a pound of TNT. That's serious. And this was apparently the second blast of random combustion that occurred on the property. Mabel also claimed that that blast had broken her foot. The month before, on January 5th, 1975, Deputy Davis had witnessed 13 of these blasts in one afternoon. Between 1:50 p.m. and 3:40 p.m. 13 blasts.
What the hell?
What's going on?
That's insane.
That's wild. In a January 21st, 1975 article published by the Saginaw News, this is now hitting the local news, it's so big, deputies who slept in the house one night said they heard Harold's name come drifting down from, quote, somewhere. In the same article, police said that the pounding and sounds continue, even with the electricity and gas shut off. I mean, that's like, it's kind of go-to. I've had weird pounding in like my pipes, old plumbing pipes and stuff like that. So it sounds like they were trying to shut everything down, but the pounding continued. That February, a parapsychologist brought a spirit board to try to contact whatever entities were potentially manifesting inside the home. And during the seance in the kitchen, Terry Duane and a police officer joined in. And the spirit board ultimately spelled out the word K-N-I-F-E, knife. Moments later, a kitchen knife rose up from the knife block and flew toward them at about 50 miles an hour, nearly hitting the police officer. Luckily, no one was hurt. Seeing this entity had become pretty bloodthirsty, the Pomeranian family asked their local pastor to come and bless the house. I believe they were Lutheran, but their pastor declined. So instead, they reached out to the local Catholic priest, Father Horton, who came to bless the house with holy water and prayer. But this kind of backfired, because after this blessing, all hell broke loose. Objects were thrown across the rooms, including glass pots and various dishware. According to Terry, he said, "The more we prayed, the worse it got."
Demon.
Yeah. The introduction of a priest and more prayer only seemed to provoke whatever was inside this house, suggesting that the entity was possibly demonic in nature. Senior researcher Jerry Solfin from the Psychical Research Foundation was brought to the house by state police on February 7th. The plan was for Jerry to move in with the family to study the events for a little bit. And soon after his arrival, the knocks escalated into banging noises and then ultimately explosions. He witnessed lamps, figurines, fruit baskets, flower baskets, and a cup of hot tea fly all around the house. He, along with Jerry Duane and their two cousins, also witnessed, and this is a crazy part, a pillow rise into the air and fly into Mabel's head, quote, with enough force to cause her head to jerk.
Imagine that.
Yeah, holy hell.
So you have a knife that's thrown at you, and then all of a sudden you're witnessing a pillow.
Yeah.
Be whipped at you at like 50 miles an hour.
Through the air. Enough to jerk your head back, right? That's pretty hard. She cried out when it hit her and then felt like the pillow was sticking to her face. And it seemed as if someone were holding the pillow against her, trying to smother her. And it actually took her two sons to eventually pull the pillow off of her face.
That is absolutely insane.
Yeah, terrifying.
I've never heard of that.
That's terrifying. On another morning, Jerry took a shower and hung one of his towels along the bar on the sliding glass door. And after leaving the bathroom, Jerry later witnessed smoke billowing out of the bathroom door. And he walked over to check on it, and the towel that he had just been using was engulfed in flames. According to Terry, the cord to an electric toothbrush had been cut, which started the fire. Two more unexplained fires occurred at the house. One was a roll of toilet paper that caught fire, which we'll talk about a little bit later, and another was so large that it caused the family to evacuate the home. It's pretty serious.
I think that's the time that you evacuate for good.
Yeah.
Fuck this house.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Honestly.
If this thing is trying to kill you with fire, with knives and pillows, I think it's time to
pack up.
Yeah. Maybe just let the house burn down.
Yeah. Collect the insurance money.
Yeah. My God.
Right. So according to the Michigan State Fire Marshal, it's a big dog, in his official report, he said this, "It is felt by all parties involved that there is some supernatural phenomena occurring at this location, and that also could be the cause of fires which have occurred." So that is a state fire marshal saying,
I can't figure out what is causing this.
Yeah, supernatural phenomena. In the same report, it mentions several fires breaking out in the house and that, quote, "the burning of the roll of toilet paper is next to humanly impossible."
What the hell?
Yeah, right?
Like, there are instances and stories of
spontaneous combustion. It is like kind of an unexplained phenomenon.
Yeah.
But to have it happen this often,
yeah,
this many times in a row.
And being witnessed by multiple people, yeah, including a fire marshal.
So he's basically saying there was nothing near this roll of toilet paper. It just burst into flames.
Next to humanly impossible.
I'd probably write the same thing. If that happened, yeah, at my house,
I don't know what's going on, man.
Damn.
It's insane. So after witnessing the mayhem, paranormal researcher Jerry Salfman believed that a poltergeist was inside the home. That's very standard, like 1970s paranormal researcher here.
It, right? Is a poltergeist.
Yeah. But some of the police considered that it was actually the two Pomeranian brothers, that they were the suspects, and especially Dwayne, who seemed troubled at times. Sergeant Charles Frisbee said, quote, "We never proved either way whether it was an elaborate hoax or paranormal activity. If it was a prank, it was a good one."
Yeah, because it's stumping you guys. Yeah,
everybody.
All, like, come on. And that's where I am with this, is like, really? Terry and Dwayne outsmarted all of these
people
in here? Could
it be that elaborate?
That's crazy.
That you got the sheriff's department, the state police, the state fire marshal, several paranormal researchers out here. They can't figure out who this is.
Like, and there's officers in the home.
Inside the home, hanging out.
Yeah, that's where I'm like,
you would think that at some point, like, somebody would have to slip up a little bit if it was a hoax. After months and months and months, you'd feel like somebody would catch something.
Isn't it the whole reason that the officers are in there to make sure it's not them? Like,
right.
That's probably what they're doing. They're probably watching Terry and Dwayne to make sure it's not one of them.
I would be watching Dwayne, like, the entire
time. Because as soon as they catch them, they're charging him with everything they can.
Yeah,
they're right. Getting hauled out in cuffs, and they're sending him a bill for all the resources, because... There's no way.
Yeah.
There's just no way.
Pretty nuts. But the paranormal activity did seem to die down by the summer of 1975. So it lasted about a year. And to this day, the cause of the paranormal activity is still an official mystery. In 1982, sadly, Terry and Dwayne's father, Harold, passed away when he was only 60 years old. That's pretty young. And their mother, Mabel, passed away 4 years later when she was only 64. Dwayne actually believes that if the family had never been tormented by this paranormal force, his parents would have actually lived a lot longer, which is terrible.
Damn,
sad.
Take a toll on you that way. I mean, if this thing is infested by some type of entity, that makes a lot of sense to me, because it's like there's so much negative energy in here.
Yeah.
This thing is, whatever it is angry. It's life sucking. So I see why they think that. It's just,
and he thought it was contributing to his dad's high blood pressure. I mean, it's high stress situation, it's high anxiety, sleepless nights. Like, none of that is good for your health, you know?
And I think everyone's number one sort of thought when it comes to these kinds of stories, why wouldn't you move? Why not leave? Like, if it's that bad, why stay? Which, again, easier said than done. Right?
Yeah.
It's not that easy. If this was like built by, you know, family, and it's like they're just going to abandon it.
Yeah. Know? My theory, which we'll get into because there's still more to this story, is that the neighbors, they wanted that house. So I think begrudgingly they were staying there because they had some huge beef with the neighbors.
Right.
And they're like, no, we're not moving because we know that you're going to try and buy this house. And so I think it was just a kind of a long running tiff, a beef that had been going on for a while. So they were just like, no, I'm staying here.
Yeah.
And it was only a year. I mean, I don't know. That is kind of a long time, but I don't know. Maybe they were just stubborn about it.
If we go 50 years later to present day, the haunting at the property still hasn't completely ended. The current residents of the home on Dice Road are Bridget and Julie Larson. They both reported that when they were home alone one night, they both saw what they described as a white shadow with hands up beside its face just outside of their window. They couldn't hear any footsteps or any noise, but they believed there was an entity of some sort there. Another time when Julie was young, she was in her bedroom and was woken up by a flash of light, and she was never able to explain what this light was. But ever since, she felt like she was being watched all the time inside of the home. And to this day, many wonder what truly happened at the Pomeranian house. Some believe that the brothers fabricated this elaborate hoax. Others believe it was a poltergeist, a curse brought on by witchcraft, or even a demonic entity. Which brings us to Steve Shippey and psychic medium Cindy Kaza. And Steve Shippey is a paranormal investigator. I don't think he raps anymore, but he was also a rapper. Prozac.
Really?
Yeah, Prozac. He was signed by Strange Music, so Tech N9ne's label, actually.
Wow, what? Yeah. That's crazy.
He's actually pretty insane.
His rap name was Prozac?
Prozac,
that's
yeah.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. I love Steve Shippey. I think he's one of the paranormal investigators out there who I think is really in it for the love of the paranormal. Like, I think he really is genuinely just interested in it and wants to like uncover the truth, right? He wants to like figure these things out, these mysteries.
Got me on Prozac like an SSRI. My name's Steve Shippey. I'm a paranormal guy.
Let's go. Let's go. Could also try your hand at rapping after this.
Maybe that's my career.
Take your ass down to 8 Mile and see.
Call me Rabbit.
Yeah. But anyway, Steve had spent years researching this case. So they went up to the house in 2023 to investigate it. And they filmed this documentary there called The Michigan Hell House. And very good, by the way. I recommend all of Steve Shippey's content's really good. But they filmed this investigation of the Hell House. And while they were there, you know, he brought Cindy in there because he wants Cindy to try to pick up on any energies, any spirits that are there. And Cindy sensed that the man who first built the property had never found peace and that it had something to do with his wife. She also sensed a significant amount of poltergeist activity with visions of fire, shattered windows, and people being thrown against walls. Because that was the whole thing. Is Steve brought her up there and he was like, I'm not going to tell you anything about the house. I just want you to come in blind and sort of feel things out. But both Cindy and Steve, while there, heard knocking noises coming from inside the house, even though there was no one there. So they had the people that were living there leave, and Cindy believed that there was a shape-shifting entity that was infesting the home. They also detected several paranormal energies several times throughout the night through various devices, including a female EVP coming through saying, "You're all going to die," which is pretty wild. After understanding the case a bit more, Cindy ultimately believed that Dwayne Pomeranian could speak to spirits from a young age and that he was the focal point of the original paranormal mayhem back in the 70s. And through scrying, she believed that something elemental was empowering the entities at the home. And on top of this, she suspected there may have been occult activity in the area that also contributed to what happened, which is interesting. Because back in the 70s, police had reported that there was a hippie commune in the nearby region. And another report stated that the two Pomeranian brothers had witnessed their mysterious neighbors and a group of strangers contorting outside as if they were worshiping the sun just before the barn behind their house caught fire, which is fucking wild. Got these like people next door doing some sort of ritualistic dance or something, and then, you know, the barn goes up in flames.
Or they're praising the sun, right, Daniel?
Yeah. And this all tied back to the strange neighbors who cut Dwayne's hair before he ended up having a seizure. According to Sergeant Charles Frisbee, there had been rumors of a witch living on Dice Road. Mabel Pomeranian also believed there was a witchcraft going on in their neighborhood, and her husband Harold believed that their strange neighbor was a warlock and his wife was a witch. Dwayne and Terry were also convinced the mysterious woman was a witch.
So over time, this whole family is convinced that those neighbors, there's something completely wrong about them.
They're into something that we're not into.
Yeah.
And it's dark.
Yeah.
It's dangerous. Terry claimed that he had once seen her contorting and screaming up at the sky. She'd even go outside in the rain during thunderstorms and light a fire in a metal trash bin and then start performing her dancing rituals.
Crazy.
Which is pretty wild.
Yeah, right?
I think any of us would be like, okay,
yeah,
what's going on next door?
Yeah, what's going on out in rural Michigan?
Yeah.
I mean, I know there's some weirdos out there.
There's not a lot to do, but...
yeah. Steve Shippey was eventually able to get Terry and Dwayne into that house of the alleged witch and warlock neighbors in early 2023. After some hesitation, Dwayne agreed to go back to that home for the first time since the incident, which was nearly 50 years earlier. If you remember, that was he recovered that kind of weird memory, but there were gaps in his memory, and he suffered what they thought was a seizure. And so while inside the home, he recalled a strange memory from that day back in the 70s. And he remembered the woman was kind of playing with her hair. She wore black lipstick and all black clothing. Inside the home, there were many candles that had been lit. And after Dwayne had agreed to let the woman cut his hair, he actually remembered that she took some of his hair, put it in her mouth, and swallowed it.
What the hell? What? This is, you know what? When I first heard this, I was like, is giving me flashbacks to Aunt Gladys.
Yes.
With her rituals.
Where she would tie the hair around the stick and snap it and use the water as well.
Then everybody starts coming.
Yes. What a great movie. God.
Yeah. Excellent.
One of my favorite theater experience of last year.
Really?
Yeah. Weapons.
I thoroughly enjoyed that movie. Yeah,
it's a great one. According to the Pomeranian brothers, back in the 70s, their parents were inspired to go to mass because of that Catholic priest, Father Horton. If you remember, he was the one that came out to bless their home when all the paranormal events were happening. Apparently, this Catholic church was the same one that their alleged witch neighbor also attended. Now, that is a bit odd, because why would a witch be going to Catholic church? So I think there must have been, it's not fully explained, but there must have been some sort of intervention, possibly by Father Horton, who maybe went over there to the house where it was like, hey, maybe come to mass. Maybe we can figure out some things. I'm not exactly sure. But either way, the Pomeranian family went to mass Sunday morning, and they saw their witch neighbor there.
Or they're just good Catholics too.
True.
And it's really, it's just Catholics feuding.
Yeah. Who knows?
That's all this is.
Really? Yeah. Could be.
Yeah. It would be very strange that a warlock and a witch would show up at Catholic mass.
Yeah. So the only thing I could
think of is, we're turning this into a black mass.
Yeah, right.
We're
infiltrating it. Yeah.
These are some really, powerful witches here, or this story is, there's a lot of holes here.
Yeah, there might be something else going on.
We're missing something
behind the scenes. Yeah, but apparently, so they see the witch woman at mass, and when mass was over, they watched as she fell kind of dramatically in anguish into Father Horton's arms. It's unclear what they were talking about. Was this the confessional? Was this just a chat after? I'm not sure. It's not really explained what was going on. And this is their memory from back in the 70s. So this was like a 50-year-old memory. Who knows? But the next morning, they saw Father Horton. He arrived to the neighbor's house. He went inside, and he didn't leave until 6 p.m. that evening. So big meeting there.
Bless up.
Bless up. Yeah.
Father Horton.
They had a lot to talk about.
We all need a Father Horton in our lives.
Yeah. Yeah. Who spends an entire day speaking with witches and warlocks to try and set them on the right path. Incredible.
God loves you.
Yeah. And then Father Horton, he called up Harold Pomeranian and told him that he told the woman to leave his family alone.
Wow.
Yeah. So we have some Catholic priest intervention here. And a month later, the house was up for sale and the mysterious family left town.
Get out of here. Yeah. What the hell? Well,
who knows what's going on?
What an accomplishment.
Right. I want to know more about this mysterious family. I think this is where a lot of gaps are left.
Is it just me, or do some of us out there think these haunting stories are just ads for the Catholic Church? am I the only one? Because sometimes I walk away from these haunting stories and I'm like, I need to start going to mass.
You gotta go to church.
I'm gonna convert. I don't even like religion, but I'll convert to Catholicism because there's just something about it, you know?
It's easy. If you want to get converted, I can hook you up.
I just want a priest like Father Horton to be friends with. It seems
who would spend all day with you, hang out with you if you're going through something.
It's basically like a mediator who can come and solve your interpersonal issues with your neighbors,
right?
Bless your home,
right?
When my local Christian pastor's like, absolutely not. I am not coming over.
I'm busy today.
No. Football's on, dude. I'm not leaving. It's NFL Sunday ticket, all right?
Pick a different day.
That's so, I've never thought of it that way, but really,
but like
so much
sense. Priests are dedicated to their craft, you know?
So much sense, yeah.
I feel like priests have like a little bit more dedication than
men
of
the cloth.
Yeah, men of the cloth.
They're devout.
This episode of Lights Out is brought to you by Alloy Health. On Lights Out, you hear stories about people facing the unknown. Menopause can feel just as mysterious, with years of hot flashes, sleepless nights, and brain fog that makes you feel like a stranger in your own head. Almost half of women wait 3 or more years before finding relief. Many are told by their doctor that it's normal, or they leave appointments feeling rushed and ignored. Alloy was built by women who have been through it all. It connects you with menopause-specialized doctors and proven treatments, so you don't have to wait weeks for care. Relief can start in hours. Join the 95% of women who tried Alloy and saw relief in the first 2 weeks. Head to myalloy.com and use the code SUMMER20. Your menopause-specialized doctor will tailor your treatment to your exact needs. Plus, you get unlimited messaging with your doctor. Head to myalloy.com and use code SUMMER20 to get $20 off.
Man, so yeah, I guess whatever happened was kind of solved by this priest. According to a witch and expert on occult rituals, Miss Ida, she believed that the area on the mysterious woman's property where the woman was conducting her rituals with fire and contorting, dancing, doing all that, might have actually been a portal, and that her rituals were not proper witchcraft, like Wiccan style, but they were actually satanic in nature. So there might have been something else. And Miss Ida was contacted through Steve Shippey. This is where kind of all this is coming together. And at the end of the new investigation, Steve Shippey's final theory, which is a big one, was that the mysterious neighbor had used black magic to try to drive the Pomeranian family from their home so she could then buy it and use it for her coven gatherings and rituals. The stress of the Pomeranians then manifested as a poltergeist that centered its attacks around Dwayne, and according to Steve, he then believed that the neighbor escalated her ceremonies to full-on satanic rituals, which summoned a demon that went beyond her control. Steve believed that the demon remained in the area for decades after the events in 1970s. Wow.
I honestly think that's a pretty good theory. I mean, if I was to put together a paranormal theory for this, I think that's a pretty good one.
And he hit every single check mark.
Yeah,
that.
Right.
Black magic, witchcraft.
Starts with black magic. That doesn't work. They escalate.
Poltergeist manifests, which we know it like kind of conventionally, it's like high stress situations
right.
and high stress people.
Poltergeist like fear it's, and stress.
Yeah,
and
it kind of follows them around.
Then when that doesn't work, still doesn't drive them from the home.
Satan.
Open that portal to hell.
Yeah, right now. You gotta get some work up, done.
Let's call up Bathsheba. Let's call up Beelzebub. Get Beelzebub up here.
Your stat.
Beelzebub.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Let's get that demon. That's wild though, man.
Everything. Yeah. A cultivation of all your worst nightmares.
But then what I don't get, Father Horton, man, just comes in here and says, time to just let it go.
You know, let bygones be bygones.
The power of Christ compel you.
Yeah.
And then it just, that's it. They don't put up a fight. They just say,
mm-mm.
You're right, Father Horton.
Turn the other cheek.
We should have opened that portal of hell.
What would,
we'll close it before we hit the road.
He gave them those what would Jesus do wristbands. They turned their whole life around.
Maybe. But they left the demon
running
around. Uh-oh,
whoopsie daisy.
They clearly forgot to close the
portal
before they
hell.
Left.
Yeah. Whoops.
So, bummer.
Yeah, but luckily, in 2023, Steve, Cindy, and Miss Ida then performed an intricate ritual led by Miss Ida in an attempt to close the portal on the property. And since then, the paranormal activity has ceased, at least for now, and Steve Shippey's explanation for the haunting of the Michigan Hell House is a bit still up for debate, but I mean,
but
I
from
don't
a
know.
Paranormal perspective, I think that's pretty
astute,
plausible theory.
An astute observation.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that year in May of 2023, Dwayne Pomeranian actually passed away at the age of 69.
Oh, man.
Rest in
After
peace.
After all that.
Yeah, rest in peace, Dwayne. That's tough. I know his brother took it pretty hard, Terry.
Yeah, I'm sure that was really tough.
But wow, what a paranormal investigation here.
Yeah, that's absolutely nuts. I mean, but it's not the only nuts story we've got for you.
No, it keeps going.
Because now we're going to take you over to Ada, Michigan, which is in the Grand Rapids metro area. Austin, help me out. Where? I don't know Michigan at all.
Grand Rapids, where I went to university, actually, Grand Valley State University. That's over there on the west side of the state.
Okay.
It's basically if you go from like Detroit and go almost straight west to the other side, you'll hit Grand Rapids. And then Ada is like just before it. Actually, I have an aunt and uncle that live out in Ada.
Interesting.
Yeah. Did you know there's also Hell, Michigan is a city?
Hell?
It's just called Hell.
That's right.
Isn't that cool?
Isn't that the Hell Town? Or is that a different thing?
That's a different thing. I think that's Kentucky.
Oh.
Yeah. But yeah.
But there's a Hell, Michigan.
There's Hell, Michigan. Yeah.
I wonder what the backstory is behind that.
I should look into it.
So just nothing.
Yeah, just nothing. But it is a small town. But yeah, Ada, pretty like kind of suburbs area, kind of the metro area of Grand Rapids.
Makes sense. Well, it was once a village of the Ottawa people, and it was eventually settled by colonialists in the early 1800s and it soon became a hub of fur trading. But today it's known for being the home to the headquarters of a notorious MLM, Amway.
Big one.
But throughout its history, the region's folklore involves wicked tales, including one of a young bride and her fateful end. So this is how the tale goes. It begins in the 1800s when a man from Ada suspected his wife of being unfaithful. Every night, the young woman would wear a white flowing dress and silently flee her home to be in the arms of another man. Late one night, the husband pretended to fall asleep. With one eye open, he watched as his wife quietly left their home, hoping to go unnoticed. He then got out of bed and followed her at a distance through the dark forest, only lit by moonlight, all the way to a secluded home on the outskirts of Grand Rapids. This home was tucked away near Findlay Cemetery on 2 Mile Road in Ada. The man recognized the home as belonging to the local blacksmith. He's got that iron rods. He then watched as his wife appeared to patiently wait near the front door for her lover to arrive with a flower in her hand. Using the dark of night and a wide-brimmed hat, the betrayed man concealed his face, hoping to appear as his wife's lover from a distance. He approached and his wife called out to him, "Oh, my love, you're finally here." And in one swift motion, the man pulled back his hat, revealing his face in the moonlight. A look of grim realization crossed his wife's face. And before the woman could even scream, he plunged a knife into her chest, killing her. He then dragged her corpse to a concealed place in the nearby thicket and waited for the lover to arrive. He would be next. Although when the blacksmith arrived, he sensed danger from a distance. Instead of his lover in a white flowing dress near his front door, a dark figure loomed. The blacksmith knew that the affair had been revealed. The two men approached each other and fought to the death in a violent struggle, with both men ultimately dying. To this day, many witnesses have claimed to see the shadowy figures resembling these men near Findlay Cemetery, where the young wife is believed to have been buried. Others have seen mysterious entities near Seedman Park and the fields along Honey Creek Road. The figures can often be seen in a permanent struggle, with one nearly killing the other just before they disappear. The chances of encountering the paranormal are said to be at their highest during a full moon. Some have heard screams of agony coming from a woman distressed and doomed to roam the area where her life had been taken, while others have witnessed an empty white flowing gown crossing fields on its own. Some have even felt tapping on their shoulders when no one else is nearby. Occasionally, drivers have witnessed a woman in a dress on Honey Creek Road in the middle of the night waving her arms frantically and screaming, help me, only to soon disappear after. Locals once believed the woman to be Sarah McMillan, whose headstone had been vandalized and destroyed by locals. Luckily, a new gravestone was created to replace the defaced one, but the new one is still crowded with spirit boxes, EMF meters, and other random objects
from visitors. Just kind of wild to see.
Yeah, right?
Just paranormal gear hanging out on the gravestone.
Yeah, in the middle of this old cemetery.
But historical records eventually showed that Sarah had actually passed from typhoid fever in 1870. The true identity of the victims and the perpetrator are still a mystery to this day. But some have nicknamed the apparition the woman, Ada Annie. And she, along with her two lovers, continue to haunt the area nearby. Sounds cool. She's spooky.
Classic love triangle with the Shakespearean ending there.
Yeah.
Nobody, why, this is what, chivalry is dead. Men don't fight to the death anymore over a woman.
No. Bring it back.
Bring it back.
That'd be wild.
Another paranormal hotspot sits actually not far from Ada, just outside the city of Rockford. A rickety, very unimpressive metal footbridge crosses Cedar Creek, where it meets the Rogue River. This might be Rouge River, but I think I'm confusing it with River Rouge, which is like downriver from Detroit, but I'm going to call it Rogue River.
It's a quality bridge.
Yeah, it's, I like how the cement foundations are, look like they're getting weathered away, but would you cross it?
Absolutely. This looks stable, you know? No wood was used, so we don't have any rotting wood.
I feel like this would buckle in the middle very easily.
Looks like you could, you know?
I like to swim, you know?
Yeah. If, as long as you're cool with getting wet.
Yeah. If you walk barefoot, you might lose a toenail, but, you know, it looks like it has rusted nicely.
Yeah. But really, this unassuming, rusted out, dinky metal bridge is referred to as Hell's Bridge.
What?
By the locals. It sits near Frisk Drive and 12 Mile Road, and witnesses who have crossed the bridge have claimed they've heard the disembodied shrieks and pleas of dying children.
Oh, come on.
And their innocent faces appear in the water below.
No.
Wow. According to legend, this is the location where a local elderly preacher named Elias Frisk went mad. In 1835, although Elias had been a devoted man of God, something went awry. Some suspect he began to dabble in occult rituals and seances that made him vulnerable to an evil paranormal energy. In a blind fit of rage, Elias kidnapped several local children and dragged them to Cedar Creek. Their screams and cries filled the woods, but no one was around to hear them out in the desolate forest in the dead of night. Once he reached the water, he stabbed and drowned each child one by one. Their bodies were then carried downstream. When the concerned parents and locals went looking for the missing children who hadn't returned home, they searched through the dark forest until they found Elias. He was wet up to his waist and covered in blood, shaking from the cold with a look of fear upon his face. In an act of revenge, the search party quickly turned into an angry mob and bound Elias with rope. They found a tall tree with a sturdy branch and hanged Elias on the spot. In his final words, he told them all his actions were not his own. He had been possessed by a demon. Those who try to cross the bridge today have heard the screams of the children and witnessed their faces within the shallow waters. The slow stream carries them away. Others have heard the pleas of a dead man claiming it wasn't his doing before an eerie silence. Some have also spotted bizarre orbs and flashes of light near the creek, and many visitors struggle to cross the bridge, not only because it's rickety and old and small, but because they claim it actually moves on its own in an attempt to cast its visitors into the cursed waters below.
Oh, shit. Whew. Yeah, that's one bridge I don't want to cross.
Yeah, now you don't want to cross it.
No,
yeah.
Staying away from the bridge.
I still want to cross it.
Yeah. Just for fun?
I want to cross it.
He hopes it throws him in. He's like, throw me in. Just see Danny on there like screaming into the night.
Throw it.
Well, that leads us to the Whitney. So we're moving away from rickety old bridges and houses to a historic building that's now a fine dining establishment.
Yes. I've gone to a wedding here.
Have you actually, really?
Yes. And it is an awesome
cool
building.
Spot?
Yes. Super cool spot.
great beef Wellington, apparently.
Yes. Yes. The best.
Hmm. Cool architecture too. It's really bringing that like 1800s, early 1900s, yeah, Romanesque revival look to it.
It's back in a time when we had to show off with architecture.
Right, yeah, yeah. Like
we really wanted to prove
we got
ourselves.
Really lazy.
We did.
Homes are so lazy now.
Yeah, it's really bad now.
Like, look at this. This is awesome.
It's incredible. I know I've harped about modern architecture before, but when you look at these old houses, you're like, whoa.
They were really works of art. I mean, it's
yeah,
like,
honest to God.
Now everything's an open floor plan. It's modern.
It's just a box.
Yeah, it's just a box.
How high you want your box?
Made of plywood.
One floor, two floors, three floors.
Right, yeah. It just takes one strong breeze to knock the whole
thing
down.
And now it's like, let's do floor to ceiling windows. Let's do wall to wall doors. You know, like it's like just big doors and oh, it's just open.
Huge, yeah.
It's like, well, just be out, sleep outside then.
Yeah.
Honestly, what do we need a house for at this point? It's all open concept.
Yeah, it's just a pavilion.
And you want it open to the outside, then just sleep fucking outside.
What happened to
being yourself
cozy,
a lot of money.
You know?
Yeah. Let's just do big carnival tents.
Yeah. A carnival tent. That's good. I like that.
That has better architecture.
Yeah. That's yeah, right. That at least got some points.
It has character.
Yeah.
You know, when you were a kid and you did the huge, like,
parachute.
Yeah. Thing.
Just get a fucking parachute and throw it up.
Stand there. Set up a TV. You're good.
Yeah. You don't even have fucking real fireplaces anymore.
Yeah, right. No.
It's all gas. It's all in a little fuck. I hate that
electric
shit.
Ones.
Yeah. I despise
so lame.
These fireplaces. They all break. They don't work.
No, they're crap. Put the wood in there and let me light it on fire.
I want carbon monoxide flooding my home. All right.
I will clean the chimney.
Bring back the chimney sweepers, man.
Yeah.
Dude. Speaking of that, how does Santa get into houses anymore? Like,
Magic, Danny.
Is that how?
Yes. With a big-ass window up front.
No, but, like, generally, like, this is way off topic, but, like, as a new dad, like, how do you explain to Holly, or, like, how would you explain to your child how Santa gets into the house?
Well, we go with
chimneys?
The Santa Claus the movie definition, and Santa uses magic, and he turns my gas fireplace into a real one, so we can come down the chimney real quick, and then it goes back to normal.
Okay.
I like to think, you know, it's like the dryer exhaust pipe that goes
in. They go in through the dryer.
Yeah.
He opens in through the dryer. Love that.
Well, back in the day, there was fucking 20 different chimneys that Santa could go down here at the Whitney, man. This thing is amazing. It's built between 1890 and 94. 21,000 square foot. You know, if I had that kind of money, this is the kind of shit I'd want.
Crazy.
You know, modern mansions these days, you know, they just are starting to look like spaceships and, you know, just looks like
they look cheap.
They just look like a cruise ship, like
Carnival
cruise ship put on a piece of land.
Like, I don't need a bowling alley in my house. You know what I mean?
Like, right.
That's what I don't get. It's like, why would you want all those amenities? Then you're never going to leave your house. But then most of these people that have those homes don't stay in their house.
True. They're just,
they just come and visit it.
Yeah.
And leave.
I mean, knowing Michigan, they just, the winter hits and they're in Florida the whole winter.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, the Whitney is a three-story, 21,000 square foot mansion. It has 52 rooms, 20 fireplaces, and a secret vault in the dining room. And what's cool is that this building, well, not really cool because I hate Thomas Edison, building was wired by Thomas Edison, you know, who ruined society forever. But anyways, he ruined everything.
He's just a marketing guy, really.
Yeah. He was in cahoots with JP Morgan and the big banking industry. And he's the reason why our electric bills are all so high.
Yeah,
we could have had free wireless energy thanks to Nikola Tesla. But you know what? Trump.
Yep.
But anyways, the building's Tiffany glass windows are now estimated to be worth more than the house itself.
I've seen this with my own two eyes. Yeah, isn't this insane?
Stained glass is some of the most beautiful, cool pieces of art. Like, I don't appreciate a lot of art, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
Like paintings and stuff. Like, very rarely am I like moved by a piece of painting.
Really?
Yeah.
That stings a little, but I'll let you have that opinion.
Stained glass windows I could stand and look at forever.
It's impressive. Also, because it's just the only way you see it is it's like natural light mostly, you know? Yeah. That's the other cool part, which they have to keep that in mind.
Right.
Like how you're actually viewing it with
the
sun.
To build that contrast and the detail is just unbelievable.
Yeah, I've seen this window with my own two eyes. It's crazy. And of course, I was like hammered because I was at a wedding, but I was like, whoa, wow, this is awesome.
They let drunk people around these windows?
They do.
Ooh.
You have to act classy, though.
They'll throw your ass
off. Keep it together. Keep it together.
Well, the construction was ordered by the lumber baron David Whitney Jr. and his wife, Flora McLaughlin.
Hold on. I want to say one last thing, and then I'll get off how far we've fallen as a society. My economically built house, 100 years old in Hamtramck, Michigan, not very big. It was like 1,300 square feet. Had a stained glass window in it.
Did it really? That's pretty sick.
Yeah, honestly. It was a cool, like, flowering plant. It was about, I'd say, like, 2 feet by 3 feet. That's how far we've fallen.
Well, you're lucky in some homes these days to get a window.
Yeah.
Like, right. Honestly,
yeah.
There's whole sides of houses of window that have no windows.
Right.
Because all the houses are next
smashed
to each other.
In, yeah.
They don't want you to look out your window and see
what's George doing.
Yeah, I can watch George's TV from my living room. It's really sad, honestly. I hate
George,
it.
Can you put on subtitles, man?
Yeah. It's just, stained glass is really cool. This construction was done by David and Flora, and David is considered one of Michigan's wealthiest citizens of all time.
Yeah.
The cost of construction was over $13 million in today's money, which is crazy. So a ton of money went into this thing. But besides being a place to show off their excessive wealth, the couple planned to use it as a place to host lavish parties, which is why mansions were built in the beginning anyways, just for lavish parties.
Yeah.
And even that has died down. I feel like other than Diddy.
Yeah, yeah, right.
How many people
scary
are throwing
parties?
And what's the dude who throws like the white party every year? Michael something or other.
I've never even heard of this.
There's like a famous Hollywood white party every year. Okay, now I got to look it up. But, you know, like all the celebrities go to a white party.
But like,
it's called Diddy comes up. Wait, was it Diddy who did this? And Michael Rubin, that's right. Michael Rubin also does it.
Never even heard of that.
But other than that,
I mean, Great Gatsby, opulence.
Yeah.
Or like wear a nice tuxedo.
And we all dance.
Yes.
Bring it back. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's good those parties died off because it's very bourgeois.
I think they probably still happen. They're just not advertised.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're not in that.
I'm just not invited.
Yeah.
We're not cool enough.
Yeah.
But Flora would not see the mansion to its completion. Unfortunately, she passed away in 1882. And only a year after her death, David ended up marrying Flora's sister. He's like, well, Flora was great, but Sarah's even better.
Yeah.
And David eventually passed in 1900. But according to legend, he suffered a heart attack when one of his daughters told him that she would be moving away to Europe and getting married. That's pretty heartbreaking. His second wife, Sarah, later passed away in 1917 after being bedridden for months. And the Whitney family would continue to live in the house until 1920. So there's a lot of deaths happening. People are dying. At least 3 people are confirmed by historical record to have died inside of the house. David Whitney Jr., his second wife, Sarah, and Sarah's brother, John. After the family moved out, the house was then occupied by the Wayne County Medical Society and the Visiting Nurse Association. And they used it as a tuberculosis ward for a time.
Which, I mean, every time you hear that, something's going
rough down. Period of history. It's unknown how many patients died there. Several decades and a few renovations later, the Whitney became a fine dining restaurant, which it still is today. Let's take a look. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
We have a couple places like this here in Denver, I feel like.
Look at all like the intricate molding.
Very cool.
Thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially like when you get into like buying homes, you start looking and talking like home builders these days.
Yeah.
None of this is happening.
Mm-mm.
There's nothing hand tooled or.
No. Are even people building like brick houses anymore? Is that gone?
All brick houses are super rare. My parents, one of my childhood homes, the last childhood home I was in, was an all brick ranch.
Oh, yeah.
It was a ranch style, all brick.
It's a lot of like the
And my
Michigan
dad was
houses.
Like, yes, a brick house.
Right. Yeah.
That's what you want.
So I am like your dad.
That's
now.
Solid.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. My parents still live in a brick colonial style house.
Yeah. Brick is not a thing, man.
That's crazy. That's sad.
And if you do a brick house, there's a brick house not far from my house, actually. It's huge, too. It's like 8,000 square foot.
Whoa.
All brick, three story.
Whoa.
And I'm sure that cost a fortune to build. Like, yeah. Brick has got to be insane these days. Now it's just done with cheap plywood.
Yeah, I know.
And the fiberglass.
Days, honestly, yeah.
Some of these houses, I'm like, I think the big bad wolf could come blow this shit down. Like, it is crazy. It's so thin and like,
the composite wood.
I'm like, I'm pretty sure I could just punch a hole through the outside of someone's home.
I've heard the theory that the reason we make them like that is so it's cheap to modify. Like if you want to add an addition, if you want to blow out walls, it's really easy to like modify the home. But I'm like, is that a good reason to build it like that? I don't know.
No, it's cheap for the builder so that they can make a profit.
Right.
Fat stacks. Yeah. Every home builder I've known, very wealthy.
I bet.
Custom home builders and just home builders in general of these home building companies everywhere. If you look up how much money they make, they do very well.
Dang.
And these homes are not worth what they're being priced at all.
Dang.
It's probably like 50% profit margin on these houses, I swear. Like, it's crazy.
I'm going to go back to the 1800s where I just get my wagon. I go
find a plot of land.
I go into town. They have the pre-assembled, like they have all the materials they need and like the blueprints. Take my wife. Whoosh, we go back, take a day's out into the middle of nowhere, build a whole house. That's what I want to do.
Throw them something sturdy.
Yeah.
I just, a log cabin is better than
solid cuts
most
of
these homes.
Of
real wood.
Yeah.
Just go out in the forest and get a bunch of timbers and fucking put it together, Lincoln log style.
Right.
Good to go. Dude, some of these cabins are out there for hundreds of years, man.
Yeah, honestly. I love how we derailed the fucking
talking about
architecture and building houses.
People tuned in for the Michigan Hell House. Then they got an episode on construction.
How to build a house. Yeah.
All right. Anyways, the Whitney is haunted. All right. Let's get to the haunted part of this, but it is haunted. Deaths, tuberculosis patients, you know where we're going from here. So there's been a lot of reports, a lot of paranormal activity involving seemingly normal guests inside of the restaurant. But the phantoms there give themselves away by having an excessive coughing fit, bringing up mucus and blood. Many believe these apparitions are those phantom patients that sadly passed in the early 1900s. Other times, severe coughing fits can be heard through the walls. But when witnesses check to see where the source of this noise is coming from, no one is there. Some have even found ghostly figures that look human, but they're clearly dressed in the fashion of decades old. You know, they're looking dripped out in their 1800s fashion, you know, all puffed up, ready to go for their parties. Guests have even witnessed some of these apparitions fade into thin air. Some have seen them with like blood dripping down. It's pretty wild. But the apparitions of David Whitney Jr. and his first wife, Flora, have also been witnessed roaming around the music room piano. Back when houses had a music room.
Right, I know.
Imagine having a room in your house just for music.
Just a grand
like
piano
a studio
in there.
Built into your floor plan.
That would be a dream.
Fun fact, my parents used their dining room and put a baby grand piano in there instead.
That's awesome.
So we never had a family meal inside our dining room. There's just a big piano that
That's
got
awesome.
Played twice a year.
Yeah, my parents have a baby grand because we have a few pianists in the my sister and then my brother-in-law. My brother-in-law is incredible at piano. So every Christmas we just go around and the fireplace is in there too. He plays this like a crazy Beethoven
Austin,
track.
Stop bragging about your Hallmark family over here. You're every time you bring up a family member, I'm like, God damn it. I dreamed of having nuts.
We really had like the chestnuts.
Chestnuts roasting. Sing it, brother.
Yeah. And we do. Sometimes we get really lame and we'll do like someone sings while my brother-in-law plays the piano.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. We're all cozied up.
Got a real wood burning fire going.
Yeah, we do. We honestly do. My parents have a real chimney in their house. I'm privileged and I'm happy.
Well, and you're dining at the Whitney, so.
Yeah. That was only for a wedding, but I will say it was awesome. That was Daniel and Julia. Shouts out. That was one of the most beautiful weddings.
Maybe you should get married there.
If my parents can cough up the cash.
That'd be beautiful.
That would be.
Flora did not reportedly die inside the home, but it's still believed her spirit haunts the building out of revenge for David marrying her sister. She came back with a vengeance. She's like, fuck David.
Man.
The top floor bar has been renamed Ghost Bar as a nod to the sightings of the previous owner's apparition, which is fun. In one encounter, a guest was quietly enjoying their drink at the bar, and when she finished her cocktail, she excused herself to the restroom, where she met a very friendly bathroom attendant. They had a pleasant conversation before the guest returned to the bar for another drink. She told the bartender about her friendly encounter with the bathroom attendant, and the bartender's looking at her like, what the fuck are you talking about? We don't have bathroom attendants here. That's a thing of the past. And the guest said, oh, there was definitely a bathroom attendant in there. Hopefully it wasn't just some prowler or some creeper.
Yeah.
But she swore that a ghostly attendant handed her a towel to dry her hands and complimented her outfit. Which, obviously, they're getting concerned here, that there's a bathroom attendant supposedly in there. That, she got to speak to the manager about
weird
this.
Weird prank to just go very and pretend yeah. to be the bathroom attendant.
I feel like people do that, you know? You see those videos, people go into random restaurants and, like, pretend to be the bathroom attendant to get money.
Yeah, to get the tips and stuff.
Try to get some tips and stuff. But the manager listens to this whole bizarre account and then goes and checks the security footage of the hall outside of the bathroom. And on the security footage from that day, there was no attendant or anyone who matched the woman's description was ever seen in and around the bathroom. But ghosts of unnamed children have also been witnessed at the property, especially in the second floor bathroom. They can be heard causing a ruckus, screaming and running around till a guest opens the bathroom door, running the blow dryer over and over again, paper towels everywhere. If you've ever been with a kid in the bathroom, it's like another playground for them. But they think all this is happening. They think there's a bunch of kids running around the bathroom. They open the door and nope, nobody inside. But voices of children have also been heard as EVPs during paranormal investigations at the Whitney. And some have suspected that these children are connected to David Whitney Jr.'s daughter, Catherine, who's known to take care of orphans, believe it or not. Phantom children have also been seen playing around the carriage house grounds. Across the way from the main Whitney house, there sits a detached two-story carriage house. You see this? Carriage house?
Yeah, I couldn't even find one. I don't know if this was demoed or it actually might be like across the street.
Huh.
I've never been here before.
Well, apparitions of women are seen over there too, thought to be members of the Whitney family. They're seen standing in windows, staring blankly into space. And sometimes their eyes are black, but scary. But more voices are heard, tapping sounds. People have seen a shadowy figure traveling through a solid wall. So lots of bizarre encounters, lots of interesting paranormal activity happening over at the Whitney. So go get your spooks and your Wellington while you're at it. Stay for the paranormal investigation afterwards. Do they let people paranormal investigate, you think?
They have like resident paranormal investigators
there. Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's like a couple, I think. I can't remember their names right now, but yeah, they're
routinely
like,
probably check the security footage, see if anything's happening.
They go down to the basement and stuff, try and track for stuff. Yeah.
Add that to the places to visit in Michigan, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you're ever there. Let's get you to cryptozoology.
Yeah, it's been a minute since we've done a cryptid, and I figured we'd go out with a bang on this episode. I knew I had to touch on Dogman, because Michigan Dogman, this is some big lore here.
Big fans out
there. Yeah, yep. But our last paranormal stop on the list is Lake County and Wexford County in northwest Michigan. This region is known for being largely covered by the Manistee National Forest, priding itself on its vast and quiet, heavily wooded landscapes. Here, dating back to 1887, was the first reported sighting of the state's most famous cryptid, entrenched in Michigan lore. The elusive Dogman. Very creative name we have here.
Dogman.
What could be mistaken for an incredibly large dog from a distance, the Michigan Dogman can reportedly stand over 7 feet tall when reared up on its hind legs. The beast has the head of a canine, striking blue eyes, and the torso of a man. Witnesses say that its ear-piercing howl sounds less like a wolf and more like a human scream. While the cryptid was first spotted in Wexford by lumberjacks in the late 1800s, it's been terrorizing large regions all over northern Michigan and even the Upper Peninsula for centuries. Some claim it most often stalks the areas near the 190-mile-long Manistee River, dating back to when the Ottawa were the only ones to inhabit the land. In one story, a woman was asleep one night in her house and she dreamt that a pack of wild dogmen circled her family home and screamed like banshees, only to wake up from her slumber to find large tracks in the snow, fearing that her vision wasn't a dream at all. Witnesses have found farmers dead from heart attacks with large paw prints in the ground nearby. Some have also found deep claw marks in wooden doorways that could only come from a 7-foot-tall monstrosity. In the early 1900s, a sheriff once discovered an idling wagon in the road with dog prints surrounding it, and the driver had disappeared, but the four horses that had once pulled the wagon were found dead on the ground. A local vet could not explain what had killed the beasts of burden, but rumors swirled that they had died of fear. Even those who previously denied the cryptid's existence later admitted to encountering the dogman. In 1938, a man named Robert Fortney, a level-headed skeptic, had heard the tales of the dogman stalking those who traveled near the Manistee River. He never fed into the tales that swarmed the local pubs, but while out near the river one day, a pack of starving wild dogs approached his camp. He grabbed his shotgun and put one down before the rest scattered in fear, all except for one. And instead, this single canine-looking animal reared up on its hind legs and glared at Robert with its piercing eyes. After surviving the encounter, he later admitted that the animal looked like the creature whose existence he had denied for so long. It was a man with a dog's head. Countless more sightings of the creature have been reported through the decades, from all types of witnesses, from pastors and police officers to stoned hippies and even boat captains.
All reliable sources.
Every single one. Through all the stories passed down through the years, the Michigan Dogman didn't gain more mainstream popularity until 1987. This is kind of a funny story, but disc jockey Steve Cook from WTCM-FM in Traverse City recorded a song called The Legend and put it on air. He made the song as an April Fool's prank, and it soon became one of the most requested songs at WTCM-FM. Steve ended up selling cassettes of the song, and this is nice, he gave the proceeds to an animal shelter. And after the song hit the airwaves, the legend of the Dogman spread around Michigan and even the rest of the U.S. According to Steve, he later admitted he had completely made up a dogman. And while he claims it was all just a prank, he thinks that the people who have claimed to see Dogman really did see something out of the ordinary. After the release of the song, countless calls came into the station from people claiming they had seen a similar creature. Even today, people still claim to have seen the Dogman on their property or deep out in the secluded woods. Many even go out looking for the creature as if it's kind of like Michigan's own version of Bigfoot.
Yeah, sounds like it. Does Michigan have wolves or like wild dogs?
Yeah, we do have wolves. I think more up north. I know there's like the famous back and forth. If you search Isle Royale, which is like an island way up near Canada, they have like a back and forth of wolves and moose, stuff like that.
Okay,
so there are some. I mean, for the most part, though, you go out in Michigan, you're not really. There's nothing really that's gonna like kill you that off. I mean, we have black bears up north, but
just a deranged man with overgrown hair in the woods.
So really, this is, I guess, of all the things to look out for that might kill you in the woods, this is it, the dog man.
So is it a dog, more dog or more man?
I don't know what you're not understanding about this, Josh.
Is it a wolf that evolved to be 7 foot tall?
I think it
stands on little doggy legs.
I think it's more like crazy wild dog head with like shredded hot
with nipples
body guy. Yeah.
Nipples.
Mammalian.
Human feet.
And then I think it goes back to dog legs.
So it can kind of morph.
Yeah.
It's a shapeshifter. So it could be some type of
Is it a skinwalker?
Could
it even be a skinwalker, maybe?
Could be.
Some type of, like, you know, multi-dimensional being versus, like, actual, like, undiscovered species or something?
Possibly.
I wonder if anybody out there listening has seen a dog man.
Who knows? I don't know if we want to listen to any of that song, but...
Yeah, I could. We could hear the song.
Could go out, or we could end the episode.
Yeah, let's play you out with some Dog Man. The Dog Man song. Well, before we do that, though,
yeah, what do you think of all this, Josh?
I think Michigan's pretty fucked up. I think that has problems. Starting with the Hell House.
That is an insane story, really.
I mean, it seems like even today, it's still got some paranormal energy going on there.
Yeah.
Unless Steve Shippey really shut it all down.
Yeah.
Damn, that was crazy, honestly. Like, the amount of reporting and documentation around that.
Yeah.
You don't see that a lot.
No.
So that's pretty compelling stuff.
I don't think, have we ever seen a fire marshal?
No.
Say that, like, this random combustion was seemingly, like, humanly impossible.
Right, because, like, why would, like, just, I don't understand how that would be a hoax. It just feels like it'd be embarrassing for all of them.
Yeah.
All of the investigators and police that live there and staked it out for it to just be like Terry or Dwayne.
Right.
Like, there's just no way.
And then I also consider, like, the fact that the brothers were saying, like, we think that our parents, like, kind of died early because of all this stress. I feel like, why would they say that if they were causing a hoax?
Yeah, you seriously. Know?
That would be weird. It's because then it would be like, we were doing this.
Yeah.
And that caused them to have so much stress. So, but I don't know. I don't know.
They could be saying it out of guilt.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Possibly.
Yeah. I don't know.
Resident skeptic, what do you have to say about all this?
I like the idea that it was the neighbors trying to force them out of the property. I don't think it was... The intention might have been with, you know, dark magic and satanic rituals, but I'm more inclined to believe that they were just physically directly causing it.
How? Explain.
Skeptic.
I don't know.
Sneaking into their house.
They had a drone before drones were invented, and they were...
Well, they said they were worried about people, like, sneaking into their house while they were gone, so I think it's a possibility. I mean, I think it's about as much of a possibility as black magic and satanic rituals.
That is fair.
Yeah. It was the dog man.
Oh.
It was the dog.
Here's the twist. It was the dog man.
Since he was so huge, you could break the window and
he could move at
so
supersonic
fast.
Speeds that they couldn't see him. It's like in and out in a flash. I believe it. I'm going to stand on that hill for this one and say, I believe in this.
I'm going to take a boring centrist neutral route and say, I don't know.
Oh, God.
And I'm going to take the skeptic route and say that it was definitely the neighbors without magic. Just good old fashioned tomfoolery and criminal activity.
Cute.
What if, we were talking about frogging the other day.
Yeah.
Could there have been someone living inside the home?
No, Austin.
That they didn't detect?
The dog man.
The dog man.
It's the only explanation. Dog man did it.
The dog man was at the bridge. The dog man was at the hell house.
Yeah. Steve Shippey considered everything except one major thing.
He overlooked a major component to paranormal encounters in Michigan.
Could it be because he is the dog man?
Whoa.
Mm.
All right, this is just getting out of hand. We're losing people. People thought this was a paranormal podcast.
It's actually an architecture podcast. Yeah. You didn't know this.
This is like turned into like Garden Home Magazine. Oh, man. Well, let us know your thoughts, of course. Who do you stand with, Toot? Take a stand here.
Take a stand.
Take a stand. I want a stance on all things discussed today. On architecture, paranormal hauntings, and dog man.
Yeah.
Tell us where you stand.
I think it was the brothers creating a hoax, and I believe Dogman is real.
There you have it. There you have it. We'll listen to a little bit of this song if you want to, but otherwise, we'll see you guys next week with another one. Till then, lights out, everybody.
just tried to chew in around the doors. And you could see a dog print, you know, alongside the window there. And so it was, you know, obviously a dog.
Logan camp in Wexford County, where the Manistee River ran. 11 lumberjacks near the Garland Swamp found an animal they thought was a dog. In a playful mood, they chased it around till it ran inside a hollow log. A logger named Johnson grabbed him a stick, poked around inside. Then the thing let out an unearthly scream and came out and stood upright. None of those men ever said very much about whatever happened then. They just packed up their belongings and left that night and were never heard from again. It was 10 years later in 97 when a farmer near Buckley was found. Slumped over his plow, his heart had stopped. There were dog tracks all around. 7 years past the turn of the century, they say a crazy old widow had a dream of dogs that circled her house at night, that walked like men and screamed. In 1917, a sheriff who was out walking found a driverless wagon and tracks in the dust like wolves had been stalking. Near the roadside, a four-horse team lay dead with their eyes open wide. When the vet finished up his examination, he said it looked like they died of fright. In 37, a schooner captain said several crew members had reported a pack of wild dogs roaming Bowers Harbor. His story was never recorded. In 57, a man of the cloth found claw marks on an old church door. The newspaper said they'd been made by a dog. He'd have had to stood 7'4". In 67, a van load of hippies told a park ranger named Quinlan they'd been awakened in the night by a scratch at the window. There was a dog man looking in and grinning. In 77, there were screams in the night near the village of Bel Air. Could have been a bobcat, could have been the wind. Nobody looked up there. Then in the summer of 87, near Luther, it happened again. At a cabin in the woods, it looked like maybe someone had tried to break in. There were cuts around the doors that could only been made by very sharp teeth and claws. He didn't wear shoes because he didn't have feet. He walked on just two paws. So far this year, no stories have appeared. Have the dogmen gone away? Have they disappeared? Soon enough, we'll know, because this is the time to fear, for another 10 years has come around. The 7th year is here. And somewhere in the Northwoods darkness, a creature walks upright. And the best advice you may ever get is